This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
Today we're going to disrupt our intro here because you're not going to hear from Brock, Garrett, or myself. To celebrate Black creatives, Darius Thomas is here to lead a conversation with Allie Just, Carrie Lofton, Tamara Brown, and Sheldon Lee. You're going to hear from them about challenges they've faced and how we can lift Black creative voices within this industry.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Should we go around and have our panelists just introduce themselves before we get started tonight? Sheldon, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, so my name is Sheldon, Sheldon Lee. I'm currently a video producer at LSU. And before that, I was at the University of Arkansas, as well as with IMG College, where Tamara Brown was my favorite teammate that I had down in Miami. So, I'm just happy to be here from all my peoples.
I'm Tamara. I work at Miami for Learfield IMG College. I do social media, video, and hosting.
I'm Kerry. I'm a videographer and photographer. I'm based in Dallas. Most recently, I was with the Cowboys, but I left this past season to do freelance, to run DeMarcus Ware's personal content.
Hey, y'all. My name's Allie Jess. I'm based out of Atlanta. I was at NFL LCC for the Falcons for 2 seasons, and I do freelance photography.
Welcome to tonight's panel. We will be recording this session as a part of our Black History Month celebration. I see that the recording has already started. So I'm Darius Thomas. I'm now a freelance video producer in Austin, Texas, formerly at Texas, Georgia, and the University of Mississippi. And I'm happy to be sharing the stage with four really talented Black creatives that I've either met or seen their work from afar. So welcome, everyone. This panel is going to be a night of fun, hopefully, where it's to celebrate each and every one of you for the things that you've done and actually spotlight some of the work that you've done, so that if you aren't known, people will now know your faces. So everyone has introduced themselves, and we will start with Carrie. So Carrie, as a Black creative, what have you found to be like your favorite thing about creating in the sports space?
Man, I feel like it's like the voice that I can bring. I just feel like I just have a different perspective just based off of, I mean, that's the beauty of like art and creativity. Nobody's art is supposed to look the same as anybody else's because of our experiences, the things we've gone through, the things we've seen, the way we see the world is supposed to shape the way that we are creating. So that's been probably the best thing for me, because like when I started working with the Cowboys, I had never worked in sports before. So I just kind of joined on a whim. I found it on Google, and like I didn't set out to like go work for the Cowboys. So I didn't have like a pre-notion of like, oh, I seen this other team work and I wanted to do this. So I seen this other person's work and I wanted to do this. I just strictly went in and just like all I had was me, my style, and my personality. And so for me, that's been kind of the best thing is, and it's been fun to kind of take that and be like, you know what, this is my first time in this world of sports. How can I just kind of shake the boat a little bit and just create some different stuff?
And we will stick with the NFL. Allie, you are the only one on the panel that I have not had the pleasure of meeting in person, but I've seen your work. Amazing photographer. Just kind of talk about how you got into this space and what you've enjoyed during your time of being a photographer in the NFL.
So I'm a little different. All of my creative stuff is part-time. I struggle with being creative full-time. So my full-time role is actually a Jack Daniels brand champion. So I plan and manage events and drink probably a little too much, but I honestly saw it on LinkedIn. I've always had a camera attached to my hand since high school, and I did a little photography work in content creation when I was an intern at UCF Athletics after I finished playing. So it was just like, you know, I reached out to Russell and I was like, hey, like, I can do this. And sent him my portfolio. He said he would reach out. He actually didn't reach out. I connected with him again. And whoever that they originally hired didn't work out. So that's how I got my shot. And I mean, I would say like I struggled finding what I wanted to do because they give you what they're looking for and you have to follow their feel and their look for the team. So I spent a lot of time learning how to do that, but also creating my own style, which I feel like now I'm kind of into now. I look up close shots, personal. I want to see your eyes. I actually like focusing on youth sports now because growing up, I have like no photos of me playing sports. I was a three sport athlete in high school. I played softball and I might have like five photos of me in a UCF uniform. So I really want to be able to get something that these kids can have forever.
That's awesome. Tamara, we actually had a chance to meet last summer at the NCAA track event. You were working with the Mountain West at the time. Talk about your experience and what you've enjoyed in your journey to where you are now in Miami.
Yeah, so I graduated from Virginia Tech in 2015 and straight out of college, I didn't find a job. I didn't find a job until maybe a year and a half later. And so I started off covering high school sports for free just so I can build my portfolio. And I was working at TJ Maxx in the morning. Like I had nothing. I knew no one. I didn't have any help. I didn't know what to do, but I knew I didn't want to quit and I really wanted to work in this field. So I just like, I'm going to get experience by just going to high school games, basketball and football, and writing stories and doing live tweeting and getting some interview practice because they don't know if we mess up. Like they don't know at all. They're just as nervous as I am. That's how I got my portfolio started. And then I went to Notre Dame and I was there for 2 years where I really got experience doing everything from like social media to recruiting to sideline reporting to video editing. Like that was really kind of where I got my feet wet. And from there, I was really strategic on gaining experience in kind of every field. So from there, I was like, I want more production experience because I kind of had a camera guy everywhere I went at Notre Dame, which is great. Appreciate the help, but like it really didn't teach me a lot. So I went to the New York Football Giants for a season and got a lot of production skills with setting up lights, tripods, cameras, editing, all that. And then from there, I was like, I need some more hosting experience. So I went to the Mountain West Network where I got more of the content creation slash a lot of hosting. And now I'm at Miami, where I kind of feel like I'm putting everything that I learned at every single stop all together. So I feel like now I'm at the point where I've gotten like the network experience, a conference experience, a team experience, and now I'm back at a university. And it's kind of, I feel like I took a whole lot of stops to get to this point, but I really wanted to take the time to learn just about every field and figure out what I wanted, kind of like Allie mentioned. It's like, I wanted to figure out what I wanted to do and what I liked, and making all those stops and all those moves was painful, but I think worth it overall.
That's awesome. Sheldon, we actually met through this platform, SEC, about 2 years ago. I saw you post and you were at McNeese at the time. You've since been at Arkansas and now at LSU. Talk about what inspired you to get into videography and what you've enjoyed on your journey here.
I think what has inspired me, I guess really unintentionally, is just, you know, of course, I've always been like a sports fan. And my father is a really big Dallas Cowboy fan. So, you know, shout out to you, Kerry. And we always had this DVD when I was coming up where it was like the complete DVD history of the Dallas Cowboys. So it was just all this NFL films footage of like every Cowboy season from 1960 all the way up until like Tony Romo was the quarterback. So I used to just sit there and watch that all the time. If it wasn't that, then it was like, I don't know, Drumline or Friday Night Lights. But I think just watching that, that kind of inspired me to, you know, want to, you know, do that myself and showcase, you know, local, you know, high schools, like when I worked at the news station or when I when McNeese was able to get me on as a marketing GA, they allowed me to just pick up a camera and just film all the sports because, I mean, they didn't have a video department before I started. So like Tamara said, like, you know, if I messed up and it wasn't good, they didn't really like know necessarily or care. Like I started off like with this iPhone, just putting out like stuff on Twitter, and the McNeese fans just like loved it. I was like, this is the best ever. And I was like, it's just an iPhone video though. But from there, I was able to grow like my skills and the McNeese media department. It was able to grow together. And then, you know, from there, Learfield IMG and Arkansas reached out, and I got to kind of see like the big stage for the first time of like being a Power Five conference or being an SEC. And then from, you know, being that from a year of being doing that for a year, I got to come back closer to home to Baton Rouge, which is about 2.5 hours from where I grew up, and, you know, get to do it on the bayou now.
That's awesome. So let's talk Black History Month for a second as it relates to all of you. It can easily be said that all of you are pretty much a part of history. Some may be the first in your field doing what you do, first Black person, first woman of color, first whatever. When you think about your place in history as a Black creative, how does that make you feel? Even though all of you are relatively young in this space, but have been in it long enough, how does that make you feel knowing that you are a part of something that will hopefully in the future be monumental? We can start with you, Tamara.
I knew you were going to call me first. But I would say what I really enjoy is most of the time I've been the only Black person or one of two Black people, but more times than not, the only one. So I feel like I have the ability to bring up topics and ideas that many of my white coworkers probably wouldn't. And so that gives me kind of the ability to, one, like make it a priority to the point where like, okay, if someone else doesn't want to bring this up as an idea, I will. And then I would hope that, you know, when I leave this space or wherever I'm at, that they'll continue to make content for Black History Month, not just because a Black person is in our content creation team, but just because it's something that we should make a priority, just like we do everything else that we make content for. So I would say, especially with everything that went on in 2020, and now as we are in Black History Month in February, it's definitely been huge to be a part of coming up with content ideas that highlight the voices of our Black student athletes, but then also hoping that like this paves the way for like this to just be normal and expected of them moving forward, whether there's a Black person in the department pitching it or not. So it's been great kind of leading the charge here at Miami and being part of the content creation and the ideas for it. And I just hope that when I do leave here, if I do leave here, that it just continues on and that I go into departments where like I won't be the one, only one, that there will be many of us in the department and many of us pitching these ideas without having to feel like there's only one person in the room that cares about it.
Yeah, just to kind of like piggyback off of what she was saying, I think just being able to like break those doors down and show other Black creatives that we can go in these spaces. Because once the door is knocked off the hinges, it's easier to let other people in and get opportunities for other people and just different career paths. When I was growing up, I didn't really have the people around me to show me opportunities for different career paths. So I never even, you know, as a kid, I never even thought about exploring something creative as a career. That just seemed something like more like a hobby. It was always either go to like medical school or go be a lawyer or something like that. So just to be able to inspire hopefully the next generation of like Black creative voices for these, you know, kids that are coming up to be able to tell their stories, tell other people's stories. It makes me excited to see like what they will put out in the world because they feel like they have that opportunity.
So is this question will be for Ali and Sheldon, and the other two panelists can answer this as well, but I'll start with you two. Is there a figure in Black history that inspired you to storytell, whether it's with photos or videos, that really made you want to become a content creator or storyteller?
I don't know if I just put them down in history just yet, but you know, while I was still at McNeese, seeing the work that Ikel Davis did for TCU baseball, was very inspiring. And, you know, whenever McNeese was able to make it to the NCAA tournament, he was like the first person that I reached out to on Twitter and was just, you know, trying to pick his brain about, like, you know, different ideas to, you know, basically, how can I be more like you, essentially? And then a few months later, actually, you guys got to be coworkers. So it was, you know, when your idols become your rivals, when it comes full circle.
I don't know if I have a figure. I mean, I would honestly say what inspired me to storytell is my family. I have a huge family. And we're still learning stuff, but there's no photos. I mean, I don't think my dad's side of the family has a full, like, a family photo together. I don't think there's photos of my dad growing up. And, like, I ask so many questions and they don't exist. So they can tell the story, but what do I pass down to my, you know, future family to show them? And I take pictures of everybody. They get sick of me when we get together, but I mean, that is probably my biggest push with storytelling. And I mean, it just happens that I love sports and got into sports photography.
Here you are, Tamara.
I would say mine is Maria Taylor. When Sam Ponder moved on to cover the NFL and they named Maria Taylor the next face of, like, College game day, I would say that was my moment for me where I was kind of just like, oh my God, someone that looks like me. Because for the most part, I mean, you know, I saw Pam Oliver on the sidelines for football, but overall, I didn't really see that many Black faces. And so seeing Maria Taylor get something like that was kind of just like, wow, like, I can do this too. And I really just enjoy not just the job that she does in front of the camera, but it's behind the scenes too, like, where she really looks forward to helping the next generation of women in sports. And that's just something I want to do. I mentioned at the beginning of this call, like, I had no help. I knew nothing. I kind of just figured it out on my own. And so the way that she takes the time to give back and help people and look at their reels and give advice and just get to know you is something that I really want to do too. It's like, sure, I want that type of job that Maria Taylor has, but I also want to be the one to be able to help the next generation that's coming up too.
Here.
For me, he's not necessarily a content creator in sports, but Ryan Coogler, which, if you don't know who he is, he's the director of Black Panther. He was the first Black director for any Marvel movie. So for me, just somebody like that who's able to, like I said, just keep breaking down doors, going into spaces that we've never been in before and giving me hope and for opportunities to be able to have things like that. I always look up to him, look up to his work, to be able to see from him going and creating, like, those independent movies, the movie he did, Fruitvale Station, with Michael B. Jordan, and just to see how his career has progressed. It gives me hope. It gives me, you know, as far as, like, for what my future could be.
That's awesome. All right, going back to what Sheldon said, because I thought that was important. Think about people in the space that look like you. I know that I've been inspired by all of your work, whether it's photo, video, and Sheldon mentioned Eichel. Who are some Black content creators, whether it's high school content, college content, fashion, NFL, professional sports? Who are some people that you really pay attention to their work and try to put some of their tools in your bag?
Alex Grant used to be at South Carolina. You know, now he's a big dog for Maryland football, but, you know, when I was at Arkansas, I did a lot of content for the women's basketball program, and to see the amount of, you know, just detail and pride that he took into, you know, showcasing that South Carolina women's basketball program, I definitely incorporated a lot of that into what I was doing for the University of Arkansas.
Anyone else?
Oh, and Kerry too, because he, you know, grew up with the Cowboys. So go Cowboys.
Is that the only reason why, man? Is it like, is that, if it was any other team, would my work be trash?
I'm just saying, you and Dak are y'all practically best friends. So,
But yeah, man, I just feel like I look around and I feel like I'm inspired by anybody who I, you know, see. Like I said, some of the same influences, definitely Sheldon. I've bookmarked some of Sheldon's work. Alex, Darius, some of the stuff you've done. I just got on to this guy, Maurice Victor, who he was up at Liberty and he's been doing some like freelance stuff. And he's like, that dude is like out of this world, creative man. But just anybody who I just, who, if you're making something, I applaud you, because there's a ton of people who want to be doing it, but they just, they end up being more talk than anything. So regardless of how the photo or video or whatever it is that you're creating looks, I tip my hat to people who are just out here making stuff.
I would say my friend D-Lo, I actually met him at a music festival. He does content, and he was actually at NFL LCC this year. And not only his work, he saw my work before, because, you know, you like meet people on Instagram and like, oh, we can't wait to meet each other in real life. But he was like, yo, you're a photographer. And I was like, oh, like, I'm okay. And he was like, no, like, you're a photographer. You're a Black woman. You're down on that field. I know it's not a lot of y'all down there. And he just kind of gave me that extra push 2 summers ago to actually like show people my work, because I wouldn't post it. So, yeah, that's my boy.
Tamara, you want to jump in?
I feel like I've already shared mine briefly with Maria Taylor, but I would say there's like a ton of people that I've met at like NABJ, whether it be like Autumn Johnson, who does a lot of NBA 2K stuff and NCAA stuff right now. It's so nice to see another, again, Black face out there that's a hybrid of things, whether it be video editing and hosting and recording. So I have a lot of my like core group that I've met at NABJ and other conferences that I keep up with, but from an overall picture, definitely Maria Taylor.
Awesome. Carrie, I want to say that I'm honored that I made your list, because you are definitely on my list. I paid attention to your work at the Cowboys, what you do now with freelancing, as well as Sheldon. So the honor is all there.
Sure, I appreciate it, man.
Let's jump back a few months, because the hot topic was from May to now being Black History Month. You saw a lot of amplification of Black talent, Black work, Black people being honored or spotlighted. We mentioned Eichel earlier. He actually did a video. It was in May or June of last year, and it actually inspired me to do the video that I was tasked with doing for Juneteenth of last year. What have you seen in the last 8 months that has really been like, you know, when you look at it, you're like, I may not even know who did it, but I can tell that it's a Black creative behind it. Or can you tell just by looking at stuff when there's a Black creative behind the work?
I just feel like when it just has a certain type of like soul to it, certain type of swagger, it's like, I can just instantly like connect with it. Like, you know, with the feature that, you know, you said Eichel did. I know Eichel getting all the love tonight, but shout out to my dog, Ike. When he did that, you know, Eichel is a great visual storyteller. That's what he does at TCU. And he can do it on paper with words, or he can do it behind the camera too. So, you know, when you watch that, just him taking you throughout all these major events of, you know, recent history, it just, you just instantly connected with it. And, you know, that's just it. When you know, that's all I can say.
When you're creating, I know me as a Black creative myself, I know that music is a huge influence. When you're developing a piece of content, whether it's short form, long form, what is that process? What do you start with? And is there something that really gets you going, whether it's something that's going to be used in the piece or out? I know music is always going to be the answer.
Well, I'm not going to downplay Killer Tracks, because I know I have a relationship with them, but they have made me bang my head against the wall as far as music concerns quite a bit. I know a lot of people, I know it's heavy in the sports industry. But it is everything. Like for me, I don't touch footage until I find the right track. Like, I will spend hours sometimes. I'll add an extra like 2 days to my edit time just to sit and listen to music. I might find a track, put it in my timeline, then decide I don't want it, go back to the website, find more music. Like, so it's super important. I feel it's the heartbeat. Like, I feel like it's the heartbeat of any project that you're working on. So it's very, very important to me to find the right music, like, for each specific situation and make sure it fits and it's adding to it. It's not taken away. You don't just, because it's a hot song right now, just slap it on and feel like it's right. Like, I feel like it definitely plays a big part in, like, helping to convey the emotion. So, yeah.
See, I don't know.
I'm glad I'm not the only one, because I will spend hours looking at music and I'll be looking at the, I'll get the time, like, whoa, I really just spent 2 hours looking at music. But music can, like, make or break a piece. And it's funny, our, like, head of video, she'd be like, you're really good at picking music. I'm like, yeah, because I spent, like, hours doing it. But music can definitely, like, sway a whole piece. Like, sometimes music is just so distracting and you don't need something really distracting, especially for such a powerful piece. So music definitely is what I start with. And then also for me, a lot of my stuff coming from interviews, I take notes so that it'll hopefully speed up the process later, especially if I don't have a transcription to go along with the interview. And so then, like, after I pick music, I'll go through my notes and trying to find, like, the sound bites I really, really liked. And then also just visuals. I probably spent a lot of time gathering B-roll ahead of time, whether it's in this day and age with COVID, since I can't get a lot of B-roll myself, I'll, like, have to reach out to people, like, in advance to get photos and videos from them. Because can't go and get it like we usually would. So I feel like a lot of preparation between music and notes and gathering B-roll ahead of time is really kind of what I start off with first before really diving into an edit, just kind of making sure that I'm prepared with the right resources.
Well, I think for me, music just influences me even going into, like, say if I'm going to go, like, film a game. I mean, back when I was an athlete back in high school, like, you know, game day don't start until I put the headphones on. And, like, it's the same thing now. Like, you know, we got a basketball game at the PMAC. Like, I'm walking from the office to the PMAC with, like, all, like, the aggressive young boy, you know, with whoever out right now, you know, on the way, you know, through security check and all that. And then as far as, like, actually, you know, as I'm filming, like, during the game, like, I'm there, I'm in the moment. So, you know, say if we win, I got to make a recap of that. I try to pick a track that, you know, best fit the vibe of the game. Like, if it was a game where we just kind of went out and did our thing, like, you know, I'll make maybe some type of trap music type beat. If it was a game like LSU women's basketball upset in, like, number 7 Texas A&M earlier this year, I'll give it more of, like, a kind of like a dramatic, like, you know, we wasn't supposed to be here type vibe to it. So, you know, it's all about the vibes really at the end of the day and not getting hit with a copyright strike there too. But when it comes to, like, getting, you know, well, here at LSU, they let me actually, you know, make, like, intro videos and in-venue videos. And I really just go crazy with that. So all of, you know, the tracks that, like, Kara was talking about, like, the hot songs and stuff, like, I get to, you know, merge that world and, you know, the visual art of it, put it together and, you know, for the athletes and kind of give them what they want to see before they take the court or the field.
That's awesome, Mr. NBA Youngboy. I'm going to ask Allie this question. If anyone is in the audience and has a question, please feel free to drop it in the chat and we will get those answered by the panelists. All right. Video people aside, Allie, let's say a game day, whether you're working a youth event or an NFL game, talk about that preparation for that event and what goes into that, what gets you hyped up and in the zone.
It's funny, Sheldon said that the game don't start till the headphones go on. I typically have an AirPod in walking around. Pre-game, no, because the player's music is playing, but I typically have music going most of the time anywhere I am. I just feel like that helps with me focusing on what I'm trying to do and making sure I have all my stuff in my bag, because you don't ever want to have a dead battery when you're walking on the field. And making sure what I would do, especially with the NFL, go through each roster, see the starters, see who's super active on social media, not focus on them, but keep them in mind, because those are the players that are going to one asks for the photo, especially if they have a, you know, a crazy play, someone's going to, you know, Slack and be like, hey, did anyone get this? And I never want to be like, oh no, I missed it. I was, you know, in the media room. So making sure running through that. And then, I mean, going out there and now just trying to capture what I see. I feel like when I first started, I like was like trying to be perfect. So every single shot, like it has to be the right one. And some of the stuff that I've gotten just kind of walking behind somebody by accident and catching it as they do it have been my best work. So just always being ready.
That's awesome. Panelists, do you have any questions for the other panelists?
Yeah, I just want to know what's on y'all pregame playlist. Because like I said, with me, game day don't start until I put them headphones in. And, you know, I know you got to get locked in. And somehow, some way, so like, what is on y'all pregame playlist?
So I listen to EDM music. I like Marshmello. DJ Marshmello is great. It's just high speed, high tempo the whole time. So that's what I have playing most of the time. Like, and not even like on Apple Music, like a SoundCloud playlist, because it's just never ending.
Come on, Tamara. No, you got something for me. Come on now.
Okay, so for me, I probably start the day off with worship music. Got to get my mind right and just, you know, thank the Lord for another day and thank the Lord that I have a job and he's given me these gifts and talents and passions.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
Do the organ.
So that's what I start with. But then on my 30-minute drive to the stadium, I'm probably switching over to some hip-hop music, likely Drake, if I had to pick, just to get me, you know, pumped and excited for a long day walking around the stadium. But yeah, so I'm probably like a hybrid of, like, I start my morning in, like, the worship, and then I flip to, like, the hype stuff, so. But gospel music can be hype, too, so I don't want to give that idea that it can't be.
I mean, Carrie, you can't top that. You can't beat the Lord, Carrie. So
Nah, I can't. I'm not even gonna try. I just need you to share whatever playlist you got with me. I drop my Apple Music info. I don't do Spotify. But nah, when I was working for the Cowboys, man, I had an hour drive to the stadium. So not like a lot of times I would just like it, just whatever I felt like listening to. And sometimes it'd be like whatever would get me like. Especially driving, like, to the stadium, I definitely had to, like, get my mind right. And then driving home, especially, like, if it was a night game, like, I get home at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning because of that hour drive. So whatever would keep me up, that's what I was listening to.
Well, I'm not going to hold y'all. I have to go with straight Atlanta hip-hop. Anywhere from Pastor Troy to Lil Jon to Ludacris, like I have to be extremely hyped when I'm getting ready to shoot an event. And that's what, you know, it's worked. I'm gonna ask in a sense what Ronald put in the chat. How big would you say that having the support of other Black creatives is or has been for you?
It's huge. Like, it's definitely something that I did not have back when I was at McNeese State. And then now that I'm on this kind of like, I guess, platform now to have a, you know, group that, you know, I can go to Darius anytime. I go to Tamara, I go to Carrie, I can go to Eichel, I go to Alex. It's like a long list of people that I can, you know, can really lean on, whether it's work related or, you know, non-work related. And I know they understand me, they get me, we get each other, and they're going to have my back regardless. And so I try to do the same thing for the people that come up behind me, especially, you know, like at a place like McNeese State. So my guy, PJ, he might still be on here right now. Like, you know, whenever I went to Arkansas, I was like, you know, don't look at it as me leaving, but just look at it like, you know, now you have a direct line to somebody who's, you know, on that at a Power Five school, and you can, you know, I can take what I'm learning. I can pass that to you to use at, you know, McNeese or wherever you go, or whether it's being at Arkansas, like, you know, whatever, anything we're doing different here, like, just ask me and I got you.
Anybody else want to pop in on that question?
Yes. Echoing what Sheldon said, it's one, social media is amazing. I mean, we all know we have friends on there that we've never even met before. And now more than ever, it's just been so great to have that Black on Black support. Like, I remember for a while, like Autumn Johnson, for example, that works for the NCAA. I didn't even know her, but just from like Twitter and like talking to her every day between going through problems or helping her figure out Premiere, it makes it feel like you know someone and you have that support. And it almost feels like you work with that person, but you don't. So it's nice to know that even though maybe that person physically doesn't work at the same school as you, you can make it feel that way when you have that community out there on social media or GroupMe or text message, knowing that you have their support and you have theirs is amazing. And just like Sheldon said, if anyone needs anything, like my DMs are always open. Excuse me if I take a few days to respond. I'm not ignoring you. My notifications are off. Don't laugh, Darius. But my notifications are off, but I swear, DM me. I'm always here, open to listen, give feedback, et cetera. Like, we're all one family.
May not answer immediately, but she does respond. Gary or Alex?
I think because I didn't have a connection to anything on the marketing side of sports. I knew coaches because I was recruited and I worked camps. But to get into the marketing content creation side, I had zero people. I got my job in the athletics because I stayed in the sports business professor's office. And I was like, help me. I want to do something. I don't know. Put me somewhere. So, I mean, I see jobs, I'm retweeting them. If I know someone at the place, I'm going to share. If you need help with your resume, I've gotten several jobs. I can help with your resume. I think supporting each other is so important because it's not a lot of us. So if we've made it, I mean, I'm going to try to pull as many people up with me as I possibly can. So if that's someone else getting a job over me, like, you my boy, like, I'm happy you got it. Or I'm just happy we're in this space, because I do think there needs to be more of us telling our own stories.
Not only that, I think it's for me personally, it's done like wonders for like my mental health, because you go into a lot of these spaces where you're the only person that looks like you, and it gets lonely. You start to question things, second guess. I feel like every creative deals with the gambit of, you know, imposter syndrome and insecurity and all of that stuff. And so that can just kind of, some of the spaces that we're in can kind of amplify that. So for me, just being able to have people who, like, you might be at another team or another place or even another job altogether, but you understand what I'm going through and I can talk to you, I can vent. And it lets me know that I'm not crazy. That's done like wonders for my mental health, because it's just about kind of helping us go along and just kind of giving us that strength that we need to kind of keep pushing. So that's been huge for me.
That's awesome. I'm also going to ask a question from RV Oliver. Do any of you have any other career goals you hope to reach in your fields?
So this technically is my field, but not in sports. I want to get onto the marketing team with Jack Daniels to help with content, photography, and video. Because it is such a successful brand, it's not a big thing for them. So if you like go on our Instagram page, it's just the bottle and a glass, or a bottle and a cocktail. And I feel like we can be so much more creative. So that is my ultimate goal, to get there. So I'm using my photography in as many different ways that I can with my job to help other brands right now. Not in sports, but still with the camera.
You know, I think for me at some point, you know, becoming a, like, you know, director of some sort, I feel like that's my like long-term goal. And you know, just seeing people like Alex Grant at Maryland football and Chanel at Tennessee, like seeing them actually, you know, like have those roles and take them to new heights, like it inspires me and a lot of other people that be like, you know what, I actually can do this. Like, I, if you see it, you can achieve it, you know? So, you know, at some point, that's what I'm be looking forward to.
Kira, Tamara?
Yeah, so I was looking at his follow-up question too, where he said, have you experienced any issues with getting jobs because you're Black, or you didn't apply for a job because you didn't feel like you belonged there? And I'm just like, how do I answer this? So I definitely have career goals for myself that I haven't reached yet. And like, I want to work and do sideline next at a network or, you know, ESPN, Fox, I don't really care what it is. But I think my issues with your second question are, I feel like I see a lot of people get jobs that were never posted, or their dad plays golf with the GM of a team, or stuff like that, to where it's like, it makes it difficult for me to sometimes keep working towards those goals. Cause I'm like, am I ever going to get there? If Sally is just going to get the job straight out of college with no experience because her dad knows that person, or the job was never posted, but she knows X, Y, and Z, and that's why she got it. It's, I feel like there's just so many things that I struggle with because I don't have that network. I don't have those connections, et cetera. And I feel like I have to work 10 times harder and move 12 times around the country to even get considered for that. But then I have to get back into my own lane in my own head and just trust the process and trust that the Lord is faithful. But that would, I would say that's my biggest struggle. It's like being Black. It's like, we don't have that. A lot of us, I won't say we, all of us, but a lot of us don't have that mommy or daddy playing golf with a GM of a team that can get us a job straight out of college. So that would be like my biggest issue with finding a job at my next step, is that I feel like I have to just do 10 times more work and move around way more to reach that next step that I really want to reach, which is the struggle, but I'm trying to work through it. It's definitely a mental game. This industry is hard. I mean, just the arts industry altogether, from fashion to music, entertainment and sports, it's tough. It's not what you know, it's who you know. So I've just been working really hard to just stay connected with people and really build those authentic relationships, because who you know has just become really important, especially once you want to reach those next steps in your career.
But Lily, the last thing you said was, I was going to say that I didn't do the LCC program this year because I was told that my work wasn't high quality. I'm an athlete. I asked for feedback. And I begged for it for 2 years. And it was like, you're great. We're going to get you to go out to Vegas. We're going to get you to do this. And they were sending me everywhere. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, your work. And I was like, oh, have you seen my updated portfolio? And it was like, well, no. And I was like, oh, well, I can send it to you. Well, you know, we need someone who's not doing cell phone content. And I was like, well, I didn't do cell phone content last year. I actually did DSLR video. And it was like, oh, well, your photos, you didn't do photos last year. And I was like, because you asked me not to. I'm going to do what you asked me to do for my job, but give me a chance. And it was, when I tell you, I was so frustrated with it, but it also pushed me to complete my portfolio. When I see jobs, just reach out to these people and connect. I mean, that's how I got down to Tampa and shot for the NFL Flag Bowl. I connected with people. So I do feel like it is a struggle sometimes being Black. And then it's like also hard to, I don't want to ever sound combative or the angry Black woman when I'm having these conversations with people, because I'm super direct. And when you're direct with people, they feel threatened. So it's always like, I'm not going to argue with you, but I am going to ask you questions. And if you're a manager, I want you to answer it truthfully. And even if you're, you know, younger in a management role, it's uncomfortable. I've had to fire somebody, but that doesn't give you the right to lie. And then when you want to make a change, you just make it with no reason or rhyme. It's frustrating. Yeah, CJ, it's a struggle.
that's awesome. I'm going to jump to this next question, but then I have some follow-ups going back on some questions. But what are some things that you all learned or have learned a lot later on that would have been very helpful or useful had you known them at the beginning? Sheldon, would you like to jump in on that?
I'm trying to give other people chances to talk. I can't hog the whole show, but something that I would have liked to have learned earlier on, I felt like, I guess really just the importance of, you know, the people that you have around you, or the creative people that you have around you. Like I said, when I was at Munis, I wasn't really connected or networked with anyone per se. So I was kind of like in this bubble in Lake Charles, Louisiana, and I really had no one to, you know, bounce ideas off of or to like say like, hey, how did you do this like transition? What is it even called? I don't even know the name of it. You know, like I had like none of that, and it was a struggle. I mean, I got through it, but you know, it was a struggle though. So, you know, like, as I mentioned earlier, with me having to go through that, that's something that, you know, whoever comes behind me, whether it's PJ Ebenezer or being at Arkansas, I open up my line and, you know, tell them all the time, like, there's, you know, anything I can help with, anything that you want to know, if you want to just call and just know my thought process behind like a certain video or a technique or a vibe of a video, like, man, just let me know. And, you know, I'm all here for you. And having something like that, you know, early on when I was still trying to figure out how to use the DSLR camera, how to use Premiere Pro, would have been, it would have been super valuable to have.
All right, I'm going to jump ahead and ask a question from John Bartman. I think this is a great segue and question that is often asked. To the panel, what should white people / creatives do to actually support and amplify Black creatives instead of the performative tweeting some engaging?
I'll go first. I was waiting to answer this. I think the craziest thing I see on social is when you see like, oh, you know, this school of business or this school of this has 15 people in the league. And I'm like, how? Right? Because if they're all freshly graduating, they don't have that much experience, and they're people with experience. But I feel like, and I think we all do it, I think we look just in our circle when we hire. And yes, you want to help who's in your circle, but does that give you the best candidate? And the best candidate might not have the experience with Snapchat or Facebook or the Packers. They might have experience at their small D2 school or small D3 school. And I think it's just making sure you're getting an accurate talent pool instead of just reaching for people that you know. And I feel like that is honestly the biggest issue. Because you see, oh, this school has 20 people. And I'm like, I've been working for how many years? And I can't even get a call. Like, this is crazy. I look beyond your circle. That's the biggest thing. The tweets are cute and I appreciate them. But I've been Black my whole life. And that doesn't do anything when I see these pictures of the marketing team and the social team and no one looks like me or anyone else. It's all the same person. So
I'm over here dying, but it's actually facts. And that's why when I hear that jobs are about to come open, I will contact people and be like, hey, do you need a job? Or, hey, this is about to come open. Like, let me know if you're interested. Please send me your stuff. Because it's like, they will literally go to their immediate circle and tell their people, but like, don't tell us. Be like, hey, do you know any Black people? It's like, why don't you come to us and ask us if we know any females or Black females or Black men, whatever it may be, to diversify the staff? Because it really shouldn't be, like you said, like all one race in a photo. Like, I remember seeing one actually where, sorry, y'all, this is like dinging out of control over here, where, someone had posted like all female production staff. And if you click on the photo, it was all females, but there was not one Black person in the photo. So I'm like, y'all think y'all are hitting diversity, equality, inclusion with that. And you're not. Like, that's just all females, which is great. But like, go one step further. And it's like, people just want to check the box with okay, well, we have females. No, go one step further. Like, there's more than that than just getting a bunch of white females. Like, get some people of color in there, get some actual diversity in there, which is part of the problem, which was what I was talking about earlier. It's like, it's so hard for me to think my goals are attainable when I have Sally, who graduated from school with no experience and instantly gets a team reporter job. And I'm like, you have no experience. There's no way that if I was interviewing for this job against her, that she should get it, because I have way more experience than her, but I never even got the opportunity. I think half the problem is like, we don't even get the opportunity to market and sell ourselves of why we deserve that job, because they are instantly given the job because of X, Y, and Z. So I think that's like the toughest part. It's like, we don't even get a seat at the table. We can't even bring our own seat to the table because we don't even know the table exists. Like, it's just mind-blowing emoji. They need to actually give us that equal opportunity to apply.
Yeah, and just to jump in too, I feel like the biggest problem with these performative tweets that we've all seen and snickered about is that they only come when they're called out, when you shine the light on it. And I think the biggest issue with that is that that shows that it's not a priority for these people until their backs are against the wall. And so for me, I think that's a very big problem, because it's one of those things where it's like, you aren't thinking about it until you're getting heat on social media. And so how do we basically make them feel us? Because it's like, there's a lot of Black talent out there. But I just don't think there are very many people who care about putting us in rooms, because I mean, it's just, there's a long list of reasons that you can really kind of get into, but I think a lot of that stuff is like, these people don't really care about it until their backs are against the wall and they have to, oh, we're going to do better. We'll do better. We made a mistake this season, but we'll do better. But then you tell somebody like Allie, their work is not good enough. And, you know, and then it's just a cycle that keeps going. So, yeah, it's tough.
Okay, do you want to put a bow on that?
The only bow that I have for that is I will be waiting on my NFL LCC vest next season. I am an hour away from the Superdome. That's all I have to say. Thank you for coming out there.
To kind of circle back to some things that Allie said, you know, with your experience of not returning to LCC this year, and some of the other things that have been mentioned about the lack of opportunities, are you all surprised after everything we went through in 2020 with the whole George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, like the amplification of performative tweets from organizations, teams, companies, that the number didn't go up? It either stayed flat or declined. Was that surprising to you, or what would be your take on any of that?
How much can I expose on this call? Because there is a reasoning why I don't work for a particular team anymore. And that's because I'm sitting here watching tweets go out about such and such, about caring about certain situations. But behind closed doors, I'm dealing with certain things that I know is because of the color of my skin. You know, I'm on Zoom calls where after the George Floyd thing happened, we put a pause on all social media stuff just to kind of figure out what we were doing going forward. And like, I remember my boss said, oh, we're not posting today. I don't really know why, but, you know, well, that if y'all are wondering why your stuff's not getting posted, like, we're not posting today. And like, it was just very like, it was weird. It was a weird situation to me, because like, it was just like no acknowledgement at all. And so for me, I guess to answer your question, I'm not surprised, because again, going back to what I said before, is like, it's only being done because you're at the point now to where you don't want to, you know, before nobody wanted to touch race. When Colin Kaepernick was kneeling, nobody wanted to touch race. Nobody wanted to kneel with him because it was like, I'm not touching that with the 10-foot pole. Now it's kind of like leapfrog to the other end of the spectrum of like, you don't want to be the only person not talking about race. So we got to say something. We got to do something. Otherwise, we're going to stick out like a sore thumb. So it's just been like, that's kind of just what I see from a lot of the things, because you see content, happy Black, you know, let's celebrate Black History Month. Let's do this. Let's do that. But it's like, okay, cool. Like the Super Bowl spent all of this time. They put all of this all these productions together, sung the Black national anthem. But then their Super Bowl content creation team was all white. So at the end of the day, what does that tell you about like where you truly stand on the issue? So.
Does anyone want to come after that?
I think that was perfect.
Dave, that was like mic drop.
So a couple of other questions in here are one, has there ever been a time where you wanted to give up as a Black creative being in this space that is predominantly white, predominantly white male? So it's male and white. Is there times that you wanted to give up and just say, okay, I'll go pick another career path? Or, and to follow it up, what made you stick to what you're doing?
I think that's why I'm kind of in the weird position where I am now, where like my full-time job is Jack Daniels, and then I do photography and content creation on the side, because I couldn't ever find anything. I mean, no one ever, I think Carrie mentioned this, no one ever told me I could be a photographer. As much as I loved photography my entire life, got in trouble with having a camera in the dugout, got in trouble for social media playing, like no one ever said, I see you enjoy this, like you can have this career. And I don't want to give up, because I've met younger women or younger men of color, and they've seen me with my camera out and they ask me what I'm doing or how I'm doing it, or people are reaching out on social media. And it's just, I don't want to be the person to be like, oh, she kind of did it, but she stopped doing it, because I do want to share my experiences, my stories with people younger than me, because I want them to know they can do it. I don't want it to be a question where for me, like, it was just a, I can't do that. Like that. I don't see anybody that looks like me in that field. But it's hard. I mean, I put my camera down sometime for months at a time, because I just like, I can't do it. And I mean, I would say the last 2 years, it's just been like, okay, find the next opportunity. And I feel like that has kind of helped the mental space I have for creating.
Kind of like what Tamara mentioned earlier, you know, we have to be like 10 times better just to kind of get to like the same spaces as other people sometimes. So, you know, especially early on when I'm like still trying to establish myself as a content creator, I mean, it would be plenty of days where, you know, as a graduate assistant, I would have to be at the, you know, at the field house, I mean, East by 8 a.m. because that's when the ticket office opens. I also sold tickets too. And then, you know, ticket office closes at 5, but we may have like a game or a practice or something after that. And then after the game, you know, I could be up until in the ticket office editing a video till like 1-2 in the morning, like multiple times a week. And, you know, so like during that process, on top of that, like still being in grad school. So, like, yeah, there are like a lot of times where, you know, it does get, you know, tiring. But, you know, like Ali said, you don't want to be the one that just like, yeah, he kind of did it. He was like, all right, like, if you're going to do it, then you're going to do it. And, you know, and I wanted to do it. I wanted to like make it shake one way or another. And you know, so that, you know, kept pushing me. And then also, you know, where I'm from, like Orange, Texas, small town in Southeast Texas, about 90 miles east of Houston, you know, there's not any like content creators coming out of Orange, Texas. Like only thing that Orange produces is football players. So like, you know, shout out to Deontay Thompson, Earl Thomas, you know, they're doing their thing in the NFL, you know, but unless you, you know, getting paid by the NFL, then you know, working at an oil refinery plant. And if you're not doing that, then you know, probably rapping or trapping or like a combination of the last three. So, you know, I can't do any of the four. So I had to be a content creator. I had to make this video stuff work out, you know, but in turn, that makes all the kids that's coming up from my high school, like, you know, see me at an Arkansas, at an LSU and say like, oh, well, he's from Orange City. He's from, I go to the staff directory online and he's from the same town that I'm from. So if he can do it and he look like me, then I can do it too. So, you know, that just kind of keeps me going.
Same. I would say paving the way for the next generation of women in sports specifically, like there's not that many Black women out here. So it's like every day when I think I want to give up or I don't want to keep trying or I don't want to keep networking or I don't want to keep moving, it's like I remember like someone's watching this. Even if it's just one person, someone's watching this and this is motivating someone to keep wanting to pursue this career. So as hard as it is and as like defeating as it is to continue to keep seeing people get things that either don't deserve them or had it given to them or whatever it may be, it's like I'm going to still keep working hard because it makes me appreciate it even more to know that I worked hard to get to where I am today and where I'm going to go to next. So a lot of it, again, has to do with kind of what Sheldon was talking about, just like the next person watching you. It's like you're their motivation. You're their person that they're looking up to. Even if you don't see it that way, it's like there's just so many people watching and who are so inspired by what we are doing in our everyday lives.
Yeah, just to add one more thing, like just knowing that, like I 100% agree with everybody else said about like just making sure you're setting the right example, but then also too, like me just knowing like this is the purpose that God gave me on this earth. So there is no other option. If I don't get a job, we've all been there where it's like we haven't got an opportunity that we really wanted, or we end up stuck somewhere where we feel like we're not happy or we want to move on. But it's like everything that like has been for me will be for me. So it's like God will either open up that door for something better, or there's a reason for why he has you where he is. So I just kind of always remember that when things get tough, I feel like I don't really want to create anymore, or I feel like I'm stuck in a rut, or I can't come up with any new ideas or anything like that. Just realizing that like this is what God gave me to do on this earth, and then and I'm gonna just keep doing it. I'm gonna use up this gift.
Perfectly said. All right, Emily has a question, and I think a lot of people agree that this was a great question. When it comes to hiring Black creatives and making room, how can we make sure that also isn't just performative? I'm unsure how to word this, but I deeply care about this and want to know ways I can be actively supportive. Emily, I think that's a great question. And who would like to get us started on that
one? I think that is a great question, because I don't think you should just be hiring people just to fill a quota, because that puts them in a weird spot, especially if you're not qualified, because if they fail, then that puts a bad taste in everyone's mouth. But I mean, they're organizations. I'm in Minorities in Sports. And I think Jordan with the NFL has reached out a couple of times, said, hey, I know you're into organization. Can you post this? And can you send people that think they're qualified? So there's people that you can connect with to get, I feel like, more qualified people. And it's just, I mean, giving everyone a fair shot with the interview. I know with Buon and people, most people think when I submit my application, they think I'm white because my name is Alexandria Nicole Jess and I go by Allie. I'm not. I'm brown. We do a Google chat or a Zoom or go in person, and it's like a shock. So I know when that person's shocked to see me, it's already not going to be a good interview, because why are you shocked to see me? I'm just a person coming in to interview for a job. It shouldn't matter that I didn't meet your expectations with what you thought I looked like. But then also, I mean, having that diverse talent pool, if you don't have any people of color that submit their applications, maybe reach out to some of those organizations to get them. And if they don't fit, they don't fit. But if they don't have the experience, but you see the potential they have in their work that they submit to you, then give them a shot. I think that is how we make those connections and build those people up. And like, again, if they don't have anywhere to grow to, and it's just a coordinator role for 7 years, that doesn't help either. Because if I don't have a chance to grow in a career, I have bills to pay. And I don't have I have a support system, but they're not going to pay my bills. So I need to see that growth in the company that I'm working at. I just can't be a coordinator for my entire life.
I love that you said that, because that's what I was thinking. I was like, it's great to get us in the pool and to get us through the interview process and get us the job, but then also make us those opportunities to grow, whether it be just inviting us to leadership meetings or putting us in rooms where like important conversations are being had. I think some people think, okay, we got them here, we checked that box, we're good. But it's like, no, continue to help them to grow, pay for them to go to conferences and professional development opportunities. Like, there are just so many more things that could be happening once they actually get on campus or in the office that aren't happening, whether it's keeping them out of creative meetings, leadership opportunities. Like, it's a one step beyond just getting us in the door. It's actually just being a great coworker, boss, et cetera, would be awesome too. Because I know for me, and like me specifically, it's like gotten in the door plenty of times, but then I have bosses that aren't my allies at all, like that are not having my best interests in mind at all. So super important that we get there in the door, but then also having that support system there that's going to help us while we're there, and the next steps moving forward too.
I think the only thing with me is, you know, you can't, like, even if you do like hire somebody, like, you can't fake the funk. Like, you got to be genuine with it. You know, when I, you know, got on at, you know, the places I've been at, especially LSU, I've been fortunate to, like, you know, once they do bring me on, like, it's been like a lot of love shown my way. You know, even before I even had like an apartment out here, they like, look, if you come early and you need somewhere to stay, like, man, I got a guest room. I got this. You can come do whatever, you know. So it just kind of like rolled out the red carpet. And, you know, I've been here like a couple months now, and it didn't just, you know, stop after like my first couple. He said, all right, well, he's here. Like we're good. We met our quota. We can go back to normal. Like, no, it's still that way. Like they see me walking around on the fifth floor, anywhere in the admin building, they go out there with it, you know, say, how you doing? You know, how's your family? You know, does your dad want to come back to another, you know, football game? Like I told like the director of communications, like, hey, my dad's coming to the game. He was like, oh, well, does he want a media pass? He can come up to the press box and that, you know, like, you know, just really taking those extra steps to really, you know, make me feel comfortable. So like I said, you're not just another like number or statistic, like, you know, they really want you here to be like a part of the family. And I think just being genuine is one of the biggest things you can do in that situation.
Perfect. All right. So got a question from Kelsey in the chat. Out of curiosity, all of you have applied for jobs. So do you all bypass the EEO on job applications, filling out your race, or do you just check that box?
I'll let them know I'm Black.
Same.
Yeah, I never thought about it, but I always do it. But it's crazy that we even had to think about it. But yeah, I always just check that I'm Black.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I get to that part of the application, I'm like, well, if I like choose not to answer, like, is this somewhere that I even want to be in the first place? So I always let them know that I'm Black. I want you to know what you get.
How can people that aren't in leadership make room for people that look like everyone that's on the panel?
I would probably give a very similar response to like when everything was kind of happening with George Floyd last year. Of course, you have a lot of people reaching out like, what can I do? How can I help? And I'm like, well, for starters, like when you hear your friends saying the N-word and they're not Black, like tell them not to do that. Like it's in the same sense of this too, where it's like if you hear of something happening where it's like an under the table hiring, where it's not including a diverse candidate pool, et cetera, just taking the opportunity to speak up then and not just like hearing it and pretend like you didn't hear it and move on. But when you hear stuff being talked about that, whether it be a job or an opportunity, or maybe it's like a meeting happening, like that'd be like having a Black History Month creative meeting and not including the Black people on your staff. I don't understand how that happens too. But when you hear those things happening or being started, it's like making sure you're speaking up like, hey, should we invite this person? Or, hey, what about considering this person for this job? I think not remaining silent would be amazing. I think that's a thing that anyone could do, whether they're a janitor or a manager. I feel like you see something, say something. If you hear something, say something. And definitely making sure that you're amplifying our voices when you have those opportunities too, because a lot of the times there are conversations that are happening when we're not in the room, but you might be in the room. And so you have that opportunity to leverage our names and talents for us.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I know just from people retweeting my work when I posted that some people have reached out to me. So, I mean, if you follow, and that's with any creative, honestly, if you see some work that's fire, retweet it. Someone's going to see it. Someone's going to save it. If you know, it's like, oh, we need a freelance photographer in this state when we go travel for the game. Like, I mean, save those people. Retweets are so easy. I love sharing people's work. I love seeing everybody's work on Twitter. I can see it better than I see it on Instagram. So I think that's just a simple thing that you can always do.
I love that, because I love when people are like, oh, I don't have money right now to support your business. And it's like, I've seen those graphics go around and it's like, it costs nothing to comment, share, DM people's work. Nothing, absolutely nothing. Like, we understand it's hard times, it's COVID. Totally get it, but it costs nothing to just share stuff on your story, retweet it, send it to people. Like when you see people looking for a freelance photographer, videographer, 2 seconds to just send it along. So it's $3.99 to just support and share your Black creative stuff.
I'm actually going to step in and kind of give my take on this. I think one thing that you can do is, you know, to piggyback off what Tamara and Alice said, is like sharing that stuff. But you know, do the same thing in the room where no one's Black is in the room that you do when they're in the room. Like, stand up, say something, like, and find creatives. Like, there are lists everywhere. whether it's the blackoriginals.com, whether it's the Black Creative Zone on Twitter, whether it's, I mean, they're a long list of people. So the excuses don't exist anymore. Like, just find a way to say, hey, we have this job open. Send it to people who know other people who know other people, and get them in that application pool. Like, I've been in the college space for over 10 years, and I've been on hiring committees. And I'll be honest, when I first started as a full-timer in 2010, there weren't a whole lot of people that looked like us in the space. Like, and I said on the SEC podcast last week, like, I've only worked with one other Black creative in my 10-year career. And I'm embarrassed to say that, but it's the truth. But at the same time, it's like, now there isn't any excuse. Like, the internet and Twitter wasn't as populist as it is right now. Like, there are Black creatives everywhere. And give them that same shot that you would give someone who may not have, you know, 27 internships. Or if they do have 27 internships, like, and they may not have a lot of full-time experience, just get, like, sometimes it just takes a shot. I would never say just hire someone to fill a quota. You're doing yourself a disservice, because typically if you're going to do that, you're just doing that and you're going to bring them in that space and they're not going to be comfortable. Like, hire talent. Like, there are talented people of color. There are talented Black people. There are talented Black women. There's talent out there that you don't have in the room. And this is no knock on any talented people. But if you want to make your organization better, especially in college athletics, now, I can only speak college athletics because that's my realm. But when you're thinking about college football, college basketball, college women's basketball, like, you have a large number of Black athletes, and it will help you more and your brand to have those athletes getting their stories told by Black people sometimes. Like, I've been in those rooms where people fail miserably because, you know, you can't just, oh, well, I think this is, like, no. I get people around you that's going to help your brand expand and grow. Also, when you see, like Tamara said, when you see something, say something. If you see a job, if you have some Black creatives in your circle, if you don't, get some in your circle, but just share it. Like, hey, here's a job. I know someone here. I'll shoot them an email. Like, it's a lot of things that we can do as a whole, and that white people who are wanting to be allies can do. And they're, a lot of times they're small. This is a part of a Black History Month celebration, Black content creators. Like I said, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have even imagined this many content creators who look like me would be in one space. Talk about each one of you, the growth that you've seen, whether it's in a non-sports alley or sports, of the growth of Black content creators, and what can we do next to continue to grow that number?
I mean, for me, like I've kind of mentioned before, and a couple other on the panel, as I already mentioned as well, just really just paying it forward. Like, you know, we all fortunate to be where we at in our respective like careers and career paths. And, but it doesn't, you know, really help if we don't help like the next generation come aboard too. So that's really where I try to concentrate on like my efforts. Like whether it's a kid from my high school back home that, you know, want to, you know, learn more about, you know, what I do from a technical side, or just, you know, from a day to day in my office, like, you know, man, hit me up. You want to come take a two and a half hour trip to Baton Rouge, let me know. I'll let you, we'll go take a tour, whatever you want to do around LSU. You know, same from the places I've, you know, other schools I've worked with, you know, like I've already said, with Ben and PJ, if they ever need anything, just let me know. And I'll, you know, help them and fulfill whatever roles that university has them doing right now. But, you know, like for me, if like, it's cool being at the top, but if I'm there by myself, then it ain't really fun, because I like to turn up. So I got to have a crew with me to, you know, kind of bounce some stuff off and turn up with, you know. So that's where it is with me, is just paying it forward. Y'all ain't trying to turn up with me. That's what's going on.
My whole job is turning up. So yes. Hopefully when the panoramic is over, we can have something in Atlanta because I throw parties. But I think it's okay for people to like sidestep. I was so frustrated not being able to get a job when I graduated from grad school. And I didn't want to go into the beer industry because I was like, I don't know what that is. I want to work in sports. But I feel like having that experience in two dramatically different industries has helped me. It even helps me now because now I get to shoot events for other brands if they need help, or I can do freelance for a flag football tournament. Like, don't ever think you're not doing what you're supposed to do just because you're not working in the field you thought you would work in.
Shout out to you, flag football. I've been shooting since I stopped working at Texas. I've shot like 3 or 4 flag football tournaments. I did not think for one second that would even remotely give me the same satisfaction, but it's actually pretty fun. Like I hadn't been able to shoot a lot of youth sports with NCAA rules and all that, but it's been pretty fun. And I
there's a girls team from Texas.
Yeah,
the flag, Texas Flag Fury. Yeah, they Texas were Fury, the best athletes really good. Out the whole tournament. Boys, girls, little kids, like they were great.
And they have some swagger and meanness to them. The first time I saw them play was actually in a tournament here in Austin, because that's how I got started. Shout out to Carrie, who alley-ooped that opportunity to me a couple months ago. But I was floored by how good they were as a team. So shout out to youth flag football, especially girls youth flag football. All right, now back to the panel. Anybody else got anything to add to that?
I think Allie hit a really good point as far as like not being afraid to like sidestep. I talk to a lot of people who are just like, they see I worked in sports. They see other people that they look up to have worked in sports, and they like get tunnel vision. And it's like they're only applying to sports jobs. If I can't work for a team, if I can't work for a college, then I can't find a job. There's so much value in like going out there. And I mean, because if you whatever you are, if you're a photographer, if you're a videographer, you're putting your reps in. So like I said, I had not worked in sports before. I was working at a church, and then I went to the Cowboys because I found them on Google. So it's like it's one of those things where it's like go wherever you can get your reps in. Like, don't wait until you can shoot for a team. Like, if you want to go shoot sports, go shoot flag football. I guarantee they'd be glad to have you. Go shoot high school. Go shoot something to get those reps in. So, like, I think that's huge. Like, that's just a huge point of, like, expanding. And sometimes, like, your path might lead back to sports. Sometimes it might not. But it's just about just putting those reps in, too. But I'm excited for the future, man, because I feel like content creation is starting to get so cheap. That's one of the things that like I'm excited for is like I feel like 10 years ago when I started doing this, like buying a good camera was so far out of reach. Now you can get a really good camera for $1,000, which still is a lot of money, but it's just one of those things where it's like I'm just excited because I see a lot more people stepping into those roles, having the tools that they need to be able to create and put stuff out there. So, man, I think in the next, you know, couple of years, we're really going to see a big surge of like good stuff out there because people who are needing those opportunities are going to get them.
All right, we got one more question in the chat. In a perfect world, what would you add to education sectors to promote creative careers to Black students at a young age? And to add to that, how old were you when you first started in your like creating, whether it was photography or videography or graphic design?
Well, I mean, at my high school, I don't know exactly when they started this, but it definitely wasn't there when I was there. They actually have like a video production, like I don't know, group or club now to kind of coincide with them not having a video board at the football stadium. Well, at least before the hurricane tore it down. So they're getting a lot of experience and reps with that at a young age. And as to answer your question, Darius, I mean, I didn't start until I don't know, like I started working for McNeese like June 2018. So that's kind of when I started first dabbling with like video production and things like that. And that was 2 years after I had already graduated from undergrad. So, you know, I never really took any classes on it or went to school specifically for that. It's just something I kind of picked up on at McNeese and just kind of grew with it and ran with it.
Great. I was an English major in college, so I definitely know the struggle.
I was a business marketing because I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. So I just went the business route and I went marketing because it was one less accounting class I had to take, rather than going like the management route. So I
makes sense. Mapped out mix. Makes a lot of sense. Anyone else want to jump in?
Yeah, I wish that, like, for example, I went to a PWI and I had no idea that NABJ, for example, was a thing until like 2 years after college. And when I tell you the first NABJ conference I went to, I was blown away. I was like, wow, all these Black creatives, journalists, et cetera, exist. Didn't even know that. So I wish that that was something I knew about before. Like, I know there are so many college students there, like, that start going their freshman year of college. And I'm like, wow, I wish I would have had that because that would have probably been a whole different experience for me. But I know that there are even like seniors in high school that get to go. And it's like, how did they find out about this? So I don't know if it's just like us doing our dues and paying back to like our high schools and colleges, et cetera, and just making sure that kids are educated on the resources and groups and things that are out there. But it's like, I wish I would have known about that because that would have been really helpful to have that network just the whole time going through college and when I graduated, knowing that there's just a plethora of us out here. Because that was just not something I knew that even existed. And I would say that I started getting my feet wet in this in like my sophomore year of college, I want to say. I just started working in athletics. I technically first started using a camera when I was a manager for the women's basketball team at Virginia Tech. That was probably the first I've ever used my camera. And then in classes and stuff when we started shooting projects and having to produce shows and stuff. But my first camera work was definitely like filming practices and games for the team.
You know, I don't know what education. I feel like school doesn't teach us anything. I went to school as a student athlete. I didn't have really a choice with my degree, oddly enough. I was a transfer, so they put me in interdisciplinary, which is like a general studies degree. And I got my master's degree in biology education. So I don't know with education. I think it's just like, I think what Tamara said is getting out to the schools and letting these kids know what they can do. I know when I'm out, especially with like the trainers and they have like their sons or daughters or whoever kids running around, if they ask me about my camera, I will typically stop and kneel down on the ground and show them what I'm doing. Because you never know what's going to spark a kid's interest. I learned photography in high school and got serious when UCF didn't really have a photographer and they wanted to show what our pregame stuff was for football games. So Eric was like, hey, do you know how to work a camera? And I was like, yeah, I can figure it out. And I literally went around one day pregame and just captured the entire experience. I think it's still up on Exposure, but that was my first time like doing something for the athletics department that they were able to use.
Gary?
I think everybody had great answers. I think too, because like the college I went to Xavier in Louisiana for a couple of years. I actually didn't finish. I was studying computer science, originally went there to do pharmacy, but I wasn't about to take those 3-hour labs. So they just didn't have, like, I probably would have got into, because I started doing video probably like 2011. So like, I probably would have gotten into it in college, but the only thing that they had remotely close was like journalism. So I think college is starting to realize like the world that we're moving into is like social media and YouTube and all of that sort of stuff. Hoping that some of these outdated curriculums can start to get, you know, even like film programs. You go to a film school and they're going to teach you how to make films. They don't do a great job of like actually teaching you like short form content, stuff like that. Like a lot of that stuff, you have to kind of just get it on your own. So I would hope to see like some of these like probably outdated curriculums start to transition more into like the world that we're seeing and the way people are consuming content that would probably help a ton as far as like getting people more interested in it.
I'm actually going to add to that because that's one of the things that I think I may have spoke about on the podcast, but I think that it's not enough to start with people who are just out of school or people who are about to leave school. Like, it actually probably needs to start, you know, junior high school, when kids are starting to, you know, figure out their careers. I know when I was like 7th or 8th grade, I saw Stuart Scott on ESPN, and I was like, I want to be the next Stuart Scott. And then I got to college after changing my major, and I was like, yeah, I don't want to be on camera. But it put me in a space to where I picked up a camera in a different way, because I used to shoot like high school film for middle school basketball, but I wasn't creative with that at all. And I used to shoot, you know, Christmas videos for the family. So I think starting them out early, like I've done this for quite some time, and now my nephew who's about to go to Ole Miss in the fall, he now wants to be in video. And I have a cousin who wants to get into graphic design and some other creative stuff. And so when just being more visible, the more people that see you, whether it's you going to a high school or someone knowing you that is at a school to talk to the youth, the more that we pour into the youth, you know, at our schools, or if someone else has a school where they want some kids that they're, you know, maybe hotheads or maybe not, maybe smart, they just don't know what they want to do. It's just like pouring into them, because you never know, you could be helping to create the next Carrie or Sheldon or Allie or Tamara. So now that I have a little more flexible schedule, that's one of the things that I really want to get more into, is, you know, showing people the possibilities, because it's definitely out there. And as Alice said earlier, it doesn't have to be just in sports. Like, there are so many companies now. If you look on Indeed or Glassdoor or all of these other companies, like, they're looking for videographers, editors, graphic designers, producers all day, every day. It's not in sports, but you get a chance to do the work, and you're never going to get better unless you do the work. Like, you don't just wake up and like become the greatest. So if nothing else, I would like to wrap this by saying thank you to each of you, all of those who were on the panel. Thank you very much for being here tonight. Great conversation. Thanks for sharing your stories and your inspiration. You're definitely an inspiration to me as well as others. And thanks all of you who listened, asked questions, and just tuned in.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.